hardwood store and, you know, pick out a window and say, we're doing this. It's all done by hand. So that's why it takes so much money. But there's one more big grant left available in the state that gives money on a matching basis for the windows, or, you know, for building.
Yeah.
And as soon as the state budget gets approved, which of course is supposed to happen by April 1st, which hasn't happened yet.
Are you in for it this year?
Not in the state budget like we were last year. I mean, the 10% came off last year's member item. And I would have applied this year, except for the fact that the way the state works is really very tricky. They sent the contract to us in, like, the end of September. I turned them right around, you know, so they get all signatures on them. We got the final executed agreement with the state in the beginning of February. And when I got them, I got a call from a girl from the state that I worked with. She and I know each other very well at this point. And she said, Dana, you put that the ramp would be done by September of 97, because I built as much time. I said, yeah. She said, well, it's got to be done by March 31st. I said, come again? She said, well, now with member items from the state, you have to be done by the end of the fiscal year, or you have to ask your senator or assemblyman to reappropriate the money. I said, oh, my God. I said, you know, this is exterior construction. I just got the final executed agreement. This is February. You're telling me that within 6 weeks I've got to get the plan, bid the project, and get it done? Well, that's what has to happen. So, I knew that wasn't going to happen. So I had been working on it with our architect so that we were ready to go to bid.
Go to commit the money.
So we, as soon as, I talked to her, I said, go to bid right now.
Prepay the contract.
Yeah, but thing is, you got to get the money from them.
Yeah.
You know, it's this whole reimbursement game and everything else. So what I said to her, I said, why don't you write the contract? Because what they do is they give you a little bit of money up front, and then they give you the rest as you're doing the project. I said, why don't you do this, just give it all to me up front? And she said, oh, come on. I said, hey, look, if there's any project in the state that's good for it, you know it's us. You know I will do it right. So, but she said, well, I can't do that. She said, but I'll see how much I can get. She gave us, of the 24 we were getting, 18 on crunch. So we got 18 hours, but I still had to go to Bruno, our assemblyman, and say,
he's the one that does all this for you.
He's the head, he's majority whip, too. So that's really very handy. But I had to go back to him and ask him to reappropriate $6,000 on this project. So I couldn't ask for any other money because I had to ask for that to finish this thing up. So we still have $6,000 hopefully coming in this next budget that.
Do you guys do an annual report with how much money comes in and what you do it?
Mm-hmm.
Get a copy of that for me because I'd like to put it in the newsletter.
Yes,
well.
If not, don't bother with it, okay?
Well, I'll see if it looks good.
But people would like to, okay?
Yeah.
You can see why I'd like to do that because it gets people thinking about how much it's got to go into
this. This is another Knickerbocker.
A Knickerbocker
from Connecticut.
Oh, a real Knickerbocker.
I'm a Knickerbocker, too.
Oh, are you?
Oh,
I didn't
sure.
know that.
Okay.
Yeah, how far back?
All the way.
No, but I mean...
Twice.
On both sides of the family?
No, no.
Oh,
okay. On one side of the family.
Okay.
Some cousins, second cousins.
Okay. Well, that's
stuff,
yeah. Yeah. When's the next tour?
Do you want one now?
Sure.
The custom tour lady.
Yeah, I had to put my coat on. I'm supposed to
with cologne. It's
like it was pouring rain.
Well, that's interesting. Okay.
I'll give you the beginning. We'll stay out here first because I got to show you the pictures. And actually, I'm going to start at the beginning because that's when the Indians. The Indians were here long before any white folks were here. And we know about it because every time we have to dig in the ground, we have to have an archaeologist on site.
Uh-huh.
And we found a lot of artifacts left over from the Indians.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of arrowheads and other things. And in fact, one of the best finds from when we found it, the archaeologist said, this proves that this was an Indian village here at one point. Yes, it was really interesting. We were digging a drainage ditch from the... One of the things this house never had was a drainage ditch getting the water away from the foundation, which is why it started to fall in. And they were digging the drainage ditch going out toward that creek. And all of a sudden the archaeologist
Just keep looking at the ditch, and the ditch is taller than I am. We're standing there. I said, whoa, stop, hold on, I found the garbage pit. I'm looking now, I don't see any garbage pit. He goes, it's right there, can't you see it? Well, no, of course I couldn't. I was an archaeologist. So he said, come on, let's go down the hole and look. So he said, jump down the trench. And when he finally pointed out to me, I could see what he was talking about. Because there was this difference in the color of the soil. And it was like if you're standing there and it's fixed, you know, up over your head, there's this outline of like this big. And it started like right about here, and it was down about 2 feet from the top. And he said, I know they had a village here because this is where they dumped all their stuff. And he said, you can see an outline of what was probably a broken ashtray tomahawk and their bones like this. And as you start looking at the soil, you can see all these things were not soil, but they were decomposed in different colors.
Okay.
You know, and so they were all shades of brown, from light brown to dark brown, but all within this interesting pit. Of course, if he hadn't been there to show it to me, I never would have seen it. But in there, also, we found a sturgeon's breastplate, which we have right here, this thing. Now, sturgeons are extinct in the Hoosac River, have been for hundreds of years. But that goes back a long, long way. And we found that in that area, right there. So that was the garbage pit. So he said they wouldn't have dug this kind of a receptacle, so to speak, if they hadn't been living here at the time.
So we knew that the
Indians, yeah. So we knew that the Indians were living here. And the first thing that happened that concerned the white men, first the Dutch came and then the English, and they were down the Hudson River, and you know, the French and the Indians and Canada, and they all were wanting this particular piece of property. But you folks like a tour if you already...
Good, please.
Yeah, well, please join in here because I've just begun talking about what the background of this land. Anyway, so here the French and Indians were from Canada and the Dutch and English are in, and there are Indians living here. And actually the Indians who lived here at that point were Algonquin Indians who were being chased out of New England. And they were literally being exterminated. It was kind of like you want to die. So it was actually the Iroquois Indian tribe who claimed this property and used it for hunting grounds, but the Algonquins were actually the ones who were actually living on the site. Well, they decided, of course the white people all wanted it, the French wanted it, and so they had what modern day terms we call a peace conference on this piece of property right here to determine who was going to keep control of the land. And so they sent representatives from France and England and Holland and the Indians, and they all met right here. And in the end, a fairly famous peace treaty was resolved. First off, it was one of the few treaties with the Indians that was resolved peacefully. No war at all. The Indians retained control of the property. That never happened in American history. And the only monument to peace on the North American continent was planted that was called the Whitmonger. And here's a picture of the oak tree. And that tree was planted in 1676. And it was finally went down a flood in 1969.
So
all that long time. And this gives you some idea of how big the tree was, because this is the base of the trunk of the tree. And that's in the early 1900s. And if you want to take a peek at where it is, the remains of it, which aren't quite granted, there's a row of trees, oak trees, right along there. At the end of that row, laying down the ground, all covered with vines, is the remains of the tree. And actually, it's not hardly any wood, because all the good wood has been taken off of it, and people turned it into candlesticks and, you know, new things to stick on their television or a bookcase, you know, whenever it fell over. My grandmother did that. She came down and got a branch and made everybody candlesticks in the family out of it. But so it's really rough is what happened was they filled this with cement. And then eventually, as it got weaker, they put guy wires on it to try to give it support. So that's what really is there, is a cement with a wood that's been filled. Oh, these are the guy wires. So that's what's down there. And anyhow, so we have the Indians retaining control of their property with that peace treaty in 1676. But finally, the city of Albany prevailed upon the Indians and they bought the land in the early 1700s. And then this became the frontier for the city of Albany. The city of Albany owned all the way up here to the New Jersey. So what they wanted people living here to act as a buffer zone between them and the French Indians, who annually were trying to come down from Canada and take over this area. That's exactly what it was. So they had farmers who came up here and lived, left his families, but their part of the deal was that they also had the military folks. So they built a fort called Fort Scatty Hook. And that was located right at the end of this field. It was right down the end of this field just before those houses were put shattered was. And Johannes Rickenbacker, the guy from Albany who rented this particular piece of property, commanded Fort Shattuck. So he was here with his wife and kids and defended the area, and when things got dangerous, put his wife and kids back to Albany and then brought them back up whenever it was fine. And one of the kids he had was Johannes II, first Johannes, and then Johannes II, whose father followed his farmer father away, and he farmed the land. He was also in the Revolutionary War. And actually, he was in the 14th Albany Militia during the Revolution, and he brought his troops here on this piece of property to prepare them for the Battle of Saratoga, which really, as far as the post was, he's just about 6 miles that way. So it wasn't, really, it wasn't all that far. And then he had a son, Johannes II. There were two. John Knickerbocker.
Knickerbockers were not good at making new names.
and John was one of them, Johannes, as they referred to him. And so Johannes also lived here. He was also in the Revolution, but he was just merely a private. But he married a woman named Elizabeth, and this is the mansion, so he knows really the one who built the mansion. And the mansion, probably the third house on it. Obviously, there's another really substantial foundation in front of this one. We figure it may have been a house that was big and beautiful and burned, because otherwise, why get rid of this great, big, beautiful house? Because the foundation is huge. And then probably when they first came up, they probably had a little house. And the family cemetery is over just beyond that red house you can kind of see through those streets. And people who work with old things think that probably the first house was in that area, because usually a cemetery wouldn't be all that far from the house. And the folks who live there say that there's some really, really old rooms in one section of the house. And so it could be that could have been the original Knickerbocker house. I can't prove it. Nobody's come back to the grave house.
How much property now actually goes with the Knickerbocker?
So right now it's just 2.5 acres, which includes the mansion and the tree. But when the Knickerbockers eventually, Johannes III, when he eventually bought the property, he rented it for almost 100 years. They bought the Knickerbocker. And that to other land that they'd already
put on. How much acres?
1,000 acres. Yeah. And back to the fact that they had bought other pieces of property up here that they'd seen them for buying the Indians and, other horses.
But they were farming it too, so.
Yeah, they were. So they had just a lot of land that was all on this side of the river, almost from here to the Puget Hudson River. And then it goes over to that creek, and then it tips again, and then there's another whole piece of property. Yeah, one of the women who's working here today, she came up from Long Island, moved here about 5 years ago, and her first connection with us was she saw the name Knickerbocker and remembered it from her deed and said, this house has got Knickerbocker on the deed. And we said, how wonderful, how'd you like to help us? So, but that turns out that was one of the pieces of property that the family had. So they really have a lot of property. So the Knickerbockers were here from 1709 until 1946, when the last Knickerbocker was gone. He had no children, died, and his wife sold property for the first time out of the family. She sold it to a family of Weirs, which we have up in Cambridge, the Weir Farm, and there at the Woodbury Wharf Park.
Ferry Lane?
That was one of them, yeah. And Jewel Howell Road is where another Weir house was. Anyway, so they lived here, and they farmed. At that point, the Knickerbocker property was down to about 300 acres.
Donald was the first one to buy it?
Actually, Donald was the first one, yeah. And he and his brothers had other farms in this valley, though. It was John and Rose here who bought this piece of property. But the thing was, it was the mansion for a little while. And actually, when I was a little girl, I was in there, but there's hardly any electricity. There's no central heat, there's no plumbing. And so, one of the charms about the place is it's so original. When you're trying to live there in the 1950s, it really wasn't a lot of fun. So they moved to the parent house, which is that house at the time.
The little red house?
The red house over there, which has been added to even since then. So it was much smaller then. And they kind of let the place fall down. And they continued to pack. And I remember going in there when I was a girl and Rose serving me lemonade and cookies while my father John had bought a brand new tractor, one of these big new John Deere's. All the farmers in the area had to come and try plowing across the road. That was the first time I remember being in the mansion. And then after that, nobody was living there, and it started to fall apart. So a Knickerbocker Historical Society was formed. They bought the house and 2.5 acres in the middle of the tree and started the restoration. The thing of it was, the house was really deteriorating badly, needed a lot of work, and started to fall in. And we got some real graphic pictures of it. Well, this is the back, and this back half, of course, looks terrible anyway, and there's all kinds of trees and everything. That half of the wall is gone. It's all behind plastic. So from the door over, there was nothing. This is the front, and so from the front door over, there was nothing. And this is the front hall, which in the winter of 1988, that thing fell off and just took apart the wall. And that really kind of took care of the mansion. At that point, the historical society. Well, that was really the plastic that was up to try to protect that area because there wasn't any wall. The wall was gone. So at that point, the Historical Society was ready to demolish it, and the group of us, like other local people, said, let's try to raise some money. So we did. Since then, we raised and spent over $400,000 on that. You can imagine how the cornfield was scatty turkey. Smack and glance and things like that. But 400,000 miles. Here's some picture of the restoration. Here's a picture of the front. Oh, that's how much was out, and then we redid starting from the bottom up. So actually, starting from the ground. That's where the first drainage ditch went through.
Is that original wood? Or?
Actually, no. We tried to use as much of the original stuff as we could, but a lot of the wood had completely deteriorated out in front. So where you see the darker colors, that's original, and the rest was all new. But it was all rich with brick.
Because of the
elements. Exactly. The original brick is all in the front. And then in the back, we had,
this is a really bad picture. It's a good picture, but it shows how
the back was so bad that there was no wall there when we started restoring. And so the back was completely redone the way it would have been. But we only had original brick halfway. So if you look at the back of the mansion, you go halfway up with a certain kind of brick, and then it leaves, and then you have to go the rest of the way to the rest of the new brick, which matches in size and as close to color as you could the old stuff, but it's not.
It's not
too bad.
The original roof
Was shakes as well. Actually, the original roof was a wooden shake, and then during the Victorian era, they did a lot of Victorian decorating to it. Decorations on the windows, around the cornices. They put out slate roof, and it's after that, and that was actually last year. And last year, one of our projects was to take off the original wooden roof, which was underneath the slate.
Oh, was it?
And then put on
It wouldn't have been a slate original.
No. In fact, underneath this metal part are still the original wooden shingles that were right there. Now, the wooden part here, that was put on in 1820. That's not original. Our project for this year was to do the handicap access ramp, so now we can get handicapped people into the first floor of the mansion, and that's really not done entirely yet. It's almost, but not quite finished. No, that's where we are now. I pick you in.
We have done nothing on the inside here but creaker floors and picked up debris. When you still have to need windows and doors and things like that, it's tough to worry about plaster and paint and paper. So we don't worry about it until we get the windows done. When we get the windows done and get the building really secure so the birds don't fly in and the weather doesn't get in, then we worry about tank failure and all that kind of stuff. Okay, this part here I said was not original. This was found in the 1820s. Before that, the slaves of the Knickerbocker family did the cooking for the family in the cellar of the mansion. Cellar of the mansion, and there was a big fireplace down there, and the slaves did the cooking for the family. But in the 1820s, slavery was abolished in New York State, and with that, apparently the Knickerbockers decided that while they could demand their slaves for the cooking in the cellar, they had to build a kitchen for the hired help. So they hired help, and there were two rooms upstairs, loft-type rooms for hired help, and just a kitchen. And there was a big fireplace on that wall, and there will be again when we get to it. well, we've been working at it, it'll get there. You know, it all comes in due time. So that's what this part of the house is. Now what is it? Now this room became the dining room when that room became the kitchen. You can see we have a little bit of electricity, but the only part of the house that got electricity was the kitchen. This room, there was one wire that went to the upstairs bedroom over here, and there was one line that goes through that front room. That's it. And there's no plumbing. The plumbing that was here was put in by the historical society, and we scooped it out with the bathroom. It didn't work. So we used that, which was fine, and there's no heating system. Never was. So now, if you go from the house, if you'll see the beams, you'll see that we tried to retain as much of the original as we could. So like on this window, you can see there's a dark post coming down, and that maximum, the lighter one. The dark is original, the lighter one is new. All the way through, anything that we could save that was original, we have saved all the way through. So when we hire contractors to do the work, we have to get really historic preservation contractors who know how to preserve and know what they're doing. And because they got to put together with the pegs and things like that. And in some cases, they had to do some hand-hewn beams all by themselves, too.
What are the holes? They look like holes in the beams.
For the pegs?
Yeah. Is that what they have, pegs?
Yeah. They're pegs. That, no, they're bolts. And
bolts.
Oh, bolts. Okay. Yeah. But they're shiny and almost look like glass. Okay.
Yeah. Those are bolts. Okay. Yeah. And sometimes you'll see the pegs. Little pegs. Another thing you may see on some of the beams is, the good examples we have are hiding under this pile of lumber, so I can't get it out. This is debris left over from what's out there. I had a couple really good posts. They have Roman numerals on them. And what happened was, all of them are done this way. The house was built, the way the house was built was they figured it all out and laid it all out on the ground. Mm-hmm. And then they numbered each one of the posts and beams so that they knew who went into what and where it went. Mm-hmm. Then they put the building up. And so it was just putting it together. They've got the numbers together. Up in the attic is the best place for you to see that. Okay. There was, later on, there are two chimneys, and there were stoves going to each one.
This was the back entrance?
Actually, no, the back entrance is here. This is just a little room missing the wall.
Okay.
It
wasn't the closet, that I know. My house didn't have any closet. And my house didn't go, this is wonderful. This is the back entrance.
Yeah. The candy bar way back then. And actually you can see it's not original, close to original wallpaper underneath the lath and plaster. There's some red scallop wallpaper, which is really pretty. It probably was designed to match the fireplace because it's a red and black color too. When we get done, we'll restore it. Make it look like it's the way it should be. Now the house was built with the independent wood frame brick, and you can see that all the way through. And after they did the exterior wall, which is what this is, they put away a plaster on it, and that's what they decorated on. The first decorating was done.
No insulation.
And then later on, when the plaster started to deteriorate, they put Latin plaster up and did it again. So all the paper is down off of this room, but most of the rooms all had paper.
This is a decent looking ceiling. I'm just saying this.
Well, it's probably been there for, I don't know, I would guess 50, 60 years or so. It just didn't get hit with the water. Now, the windows that are here are new. New old style. They're 6/6, which is what originally was here. And these are new ones that we just had done last year. So we've got five new windows.
They're kind of long last.
I'm going to have to ask the contractor what he did. We're finally in here because they put the windows on, the shutters up. And the shutters are closed because we have to have a blacksmith make the fixtures because they don't make the kind of fixtures you need to open and close shutters anymore that work right. And so we are mostly closed, but today is the first day I really had a chance to look, and there's some panes in there that are really wavy.
Yeah,
it's not like new glass. No, it's not like new glass, and I don't know if the purpose for glass is deflated.
It's just
fake stuff,
yeah.
Or maybe they make glass like that now for exactly that reason.
They do. I don't know, but it's But you're looking at it, and it's not, it doesn't look like brand new glass, you know, you get in the hardware store today, but it's new windows, brand new windows, because there weren't any there. Now, once they bought the house, the floors are all original, all the way through. And if you look, now remember, this house was built in the Revolutionary War time. You would have thought that they would have used live board floors, which is the colonial way of doing things, but these are narrow. The reason for that is the Knickerbocker family at that point was fairly wealthy and wanted to show off their wealth. And one of the ways they did it was to build a brick house. But another way, downstairs here where the company was coming, was to put in narrow board floors, which cost more than the wide board floor
at the time.
At the time, yes. So that's the reason for the narrow board.
What kind of wood do you think it is?
You know, I don't know. I think someplace in some reports that we have, it'll say what it is, but I don't know what it is.
It's going to be a hard wood, though.
Do you think it's the grayishness to it, a paint that's been on it?
Probably, yeah.